Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we will be discussing chapter 18 of Wuthering Heights, and then we'll be reading chapter 19 of Wuthering Heights. The questions that I asked you guys about chapter 18 were these. We've had a good description now of Kathy's personality, and we've seen her in action. What kind of lady do you think she'll grow into? Do you think it was a good idea to keep her cousin a secret from her? And Harriton doesn't like being called a servant. How do you think he sees himself? Swim said the mum of fish, he said, well, after all the sturm and drang of the previous chapters, this chapter was really quite placid. Sturm and drang. Sturm meaning storm, assault and gale. Drang, meaning urge, drive, and impulse. I've never heard that phrase, sturm and drang. I like it. It was quite a placid chapter, but it still moved nicely. I actually really enjoyed chapter 18. I thought it was, it wasn't an action-packed one like the previous chapter, but it was, I don't know, it was just a nice pace. Swim, said the mum of fishy, continued, I think Kathy is spoiled and entitled, and as always, Nelly stirs the pot to keep things on edge, and then she doth protests too much. Kathy expresses over and over how she wants to go to the crags, and Nelly gives her the means and opportunity, and then is surprised, not buying it. Apparently Harriton is quite the handsome lad and possesses an innate intelligence. It appears that Edgar is bringing Isabella's son back, so I'm sure that things will heat up again. Savvy kid said, I think once she is about to face a harsh reality, when she discovers her father cannot control every person's actions that offend her, she seems way too innocent. This is referring to Kathy, I think. What kind of lady do you think Kathy will turn into? She seems way too innocent for the world that these characters live in. I think she is going to have a hard time adjusting to it when there is no one to call her princess any longer. I think her father had good intentions in wanting to shelter Kathy from the truth about her family origins. However, it only left her naive. Every family is messy and has some kind of drama that gets brought out into the light eventually. I think she definitely should have been raised differently with full knowledge of her deranged familial ties to prepare her. Harriton is described as a big brute whose manners were never corrected, but he still is nice to Kathy for a little while before he is insulted. I have a hard time understanding his character because he does seem to understand he is more than a servant but does not seem to harbour ill feelings, at least not yet, towards Heathcliff for stripping him of his inheritance. I can't imagine he would feel at peace sitting in this title of limbo. Wasm said, but I insisted most on the fact that if she revealed my negligence of his orders, he would perhaps be so angry that I should have to leave. At least Nelly admits that. So Joseph blames Heathcliff for Harriton's condition, but does nothing to help change it. I'm left wondering what could become of him if the fertile soil, as Nelly put it, was put to use. Techrific said, here are some of my unfiltered thoughts. Kathy is described as a mix of her parents. Hopefully this is a good thing, but so far we've mostly seen traits coming from her mother, or at least that's how Nelly sees her. The dogs, gotta love the dogs scene in this book. So vivid and cinematic. Emily Bronte manages, with very few words, to conjure up the fight scenes so vividly and viscerally. Yeah, what's with all the dogs fighting in this book? They're all, like, so poorly trained. How many dog fights and dog attacks have we had so far? It's been several. Techrific continued, now, listen, there should be, or perhaps there is, some name for the trope when someone is kept out of the loop and in withholding that information, bad things follow. I'd like to call it the no caveat trope, since I'm such a pretentious fella, no warning leads to bad things. Kathy is brought up very much like her mother, with the exception of how limited her world is. Apart from the occasional trip to the moors with her doting father, she's pretty much cooped up in the Grange. all day. Of course she will venture out beyond the confines of her gilded cage. Of course she may end up in the accursed Wuthering Heights. Nothing good will come of this. Caveat lector. Reader beware. Why didn't Edgar explain to her, in an age-appropriate way, why she's kept far away from Wuthering Heights? I don't know. Maybe she would have gone there anyway. Kids will be kids. I have no idea how Harrington sees himself. I'd venture a guess and say as Heathcliff light, full of pride. It remains to be seen what else lurks behind his rough exterior. Nicely said, Techrific. You know, I think I like your unfiltered thoughts for a change. I like it. Feel free to take that filter off any time you please. G.K. Hahn said, I feel for Kathy. Imagine being locked in a single house and park for 12 years of your life, seeing the same people every day, and having no one around you that's your age. She is extremely isolated, and the way she's treated in the Grange is the sole hammer shaping her character. Of course she would turn out to be this spoiled, oblivious, and conceited. As for keeping Harrington a secret, I think it was the right call. Even when Hindley was alive, Harrington was under the wings of Joseph, mostly. Harrington, in turn, was shaped by Joseph and whatever Heathcliff did to him for the last 12 years. Joseph treated him as an honorary owner and master, and the fruits took the form of unfounded pride. Bit of an enigma, that Harrington character. I'd like to get inside his head a little bit more, because he's so many things. Apparently he has this kind of like innate intelligence, but he's very uneducated. But then he's kind of a brute, and he's the kind of the product of neglect. But at the same time, he can be kind. He seems sensitive. He gets insulted quite easily. He's a lot of things, but I get the gut feeling he might be a decent person, but it's hard to tell from this point. Maybe a little bit of a diamond in the rough. Alright, that was the Chapter 18 discussion. Thank you for everyone who commented. Helps the discussion move along. Your insights are very much appreciated by myself, and I'm sure I speak on behalf of everyone listening too when I say that. Each episode of this gets a couple of hundred downloads, listens. So even though it's the same, dozen or so people who are joining the conversation, there's quite a few people who are just kind of lurking. They call them lurkers, right? They're just listening along. So those who do join in the conversation, myself and the rest of the community really do appreciate it. All right, Chapter 19 of Wuthering Heights goes exactly like this. A letter, edged with black, announced the day of my master's return. Isabella was dead, and he wrote to bid me get mourning for his daughter, and arrange a room and other accommodations for his youthful nephew. Catherine ran. Oh my gosh, sorry, I can't read at the moment. Let me continue here a little bit more carefully. Catherine ran wild with joy at the idea of welcoming her father back, and indulged most sanguine anticipations of the innumerable excellencies of her real cousin. The evening of their expected arrival came. Since early morning she had been busy ordering her own small affairs, and now attired in her new black frock. Poor thing, her aunt's death impressed her with no definite sorrow. She obliged me, by constant worrying, to walk with her down through the grounds to meet them. Linton is just 6 months younger than I am, she chattered, as we strolled leisurely over the swells and hollows of mossy turf under shadow of the trees. How delightful it will be to have him for a playfellow. Aunt Isabella sent Papa a beautiful lock of his hair. It was lighter than mine, more flaxen, and quite as fine. I have it carefully preserved in a little glass box, and I've often thought what a pleasure it would be to see its owner. Oh, I am happy, and Papa, dear, dear Papa, come, Ellen, let us run. Come, run. She ran, and returned, and ran again, many times, before my sober footsteps reached the gate, and then she seated herself on the grassy bank beside the path, and tried to wait patiently, but that was impossible. She couldn't be still a minute. "How long they are," she exclaimed. "Ah, I see some dust on the road. They are coming. No, when will they be here? May we not go a little way, half a mile, Ellen? Only just half a mile? Do say yes, to that clump of birches at the turn." I refused staunchly. At length her suspense was ended. The travelling carriage rolled in sight. Miss Cathy shrieked and stretched out her arms as soon as she caught her father's face looking from the window. He descended, nearly as eager as herself, and a considerable interval elapsed ere they had a thought to spare for any but themselves. While they exchanged caresses, I took a peep in to see after Linton. He was asleep in a corner, wrapped in a warm fur-lined cloak, as if it had been winter. A pale, delicate, effeminate boy, who might have been taken for my master's young brother, so strong was the resemblance, but there was a sickly peevishness in his aspect that Edgar Linton never had. The latter saw me looking, and having shaken hands, advised me to close the door and leave him undisturbed, for the journey had fatigued him. Cathy would fain have taken one glance, but her father told her to come, and they walked together up the park, while I hastened before to prepare the servants. "Now, darling," said Mr. Linton, addressing his daughter, as they halted at the bottom of the front steps, "your cousin is not so strong or so merry as you are, and he has lost his mother, remember, a very short time since. Therefore don't expect him to play and run about with you directly. And don't harass him much by talking. Let him be quiet this evening at least, will you?" "Yes, yes, Papa," answered Catherine, "but I do want to see him, and he hasn't once looked out." The carriage stopped, and the sleeper, being roused, was lifted to the ground by his uncle. "This is your cousin, Cathy, Linton," he said, putting their little hands together. "She's fond of you already, and mind you don't grieve her by crying tonight. Try to be cheerful now. The travelling is at an end, and you have nothing to do but rest and amuse yourself as you please." "Let me go to bed, then," answered the boy, shrinking from Catherine's salute, and he put his fingers to remove incipient tears. "Come, come, there's a good child," I whispered, leading him in. "You'll make her weep, too. See how sorry she is for you." I do not know whether it was sorrow for him, but his cousin put on a sad a countenance as himself, and returned to her father. All three entered, and mounted to the library, where tea was laid ready. I proceeded to remove Linton's cap and mantle, and placed him on a chair by the table. But he was no sooner seated than he began to cry afresh. My master inquired what was the matter. "I can't sit on a chair," sobbed the boy. "Go to the sofa, then, and Ellen shall bring you some tea," answered his uncle patiently. He had been greatly tried during the journey. I felt convinced by his fretful, ailing charge. Linton slowly trailed himself off and lay down. Cathy carried a footstool and her cup to his side. At first she sat silent, but that could not last. She had resolved to make a pet of her little cousin, as she would have him to be, and she commenced stroking his curls and kissing his cheek and offering him tea in her saucer like a baby. This pleased him, for he was not much better. He dried his eyes and lightened into a faint smile. "Oh, he'll do very well," said the master to me, after watching them a minute. "Very well, if we can keep him, Ellen. The company of a child of his own age will instil new spirit into him soon, and by wishing for strength he'll gain it." "Ay, if we can keep him," I mused to myself, and saw misgivings come over me that there was a slight hope of that. "And then," I thought, "however will that weakling live at Wuthering Heights? Between his father and Harriton, what playmates and instructors they'll be." Our doubts were presently decided, even earlier than I expected. I had just taken the children upstairs after tea was finished and seen Linton asleep. He would not suffer me to leave him till that was the case. I had come down and was standing by the table in the hall, lighting a bedroom candle for Mr. Edgar, when a maid stepped out of the kitchen and informed me that Mr. Heathcliff's servant Joseph was at the door and wished to speak with the master. "I shall ask him what he wants first," I said, in considerable trepidation. "A very unlikely hour to be troubling people, and the instant they have returned from a long journey. I don't think the master can see him." Joseph had advanced through the kitchen as I uttered these words, and now presented himself in the hall. He was donned in his Sunday garments, with his most sanctimonious and sourest face, and holding his hat in one hand and his stick in the other, he proceeded to clean his shoes on the mat. "Good evening, Joseph," I said coldly. "What business brings you here tonight?" "It's Maister Linton I mun speak to," he answered, waving me disdainfully aside. "Mr. Linton is going to bed. Unless you have something particular to say, I'm sure he won't hear it now," I continued. "You had better sit down in there and entrust your message to me." "Which is his room?" pursued the fellow, surveying the range of closed doors. I perceived he was bent on refusing my mediation, so very reluctantly I went up to the library and announced the unseasonable visitor, advising that he should be dismissed till next day. Mr. Linton had no time to empower me to do so, for Joseph mounted close at my heels and, pushing into the apartment, planted himself at the far side of the table with his two fists clapped on the head of his stick, and began in an elevated tone as if anticipating opposition. "Heathcliff has sent me for his lad, and I mun't go back about him. Edgar Linton was silent a minute. An expression of exceeding sorrow overcast his features. He would have pitied the child on his own account, but recalling Isabella's hopes and fears, and anxious wishes for her son, and her commendations of him to his care, he grieved bitterly at the prospect of yielding him up, and searched in his heart how it might be avoided. No plan offered itself. The very exhibition of any desire to keep him would have rendered the claimant more peremptory. There was nothing left but to resign him. However, he was not going to rouse him from his sleep. "Tell Mr. Heathcliff," he answered calmly, "that his son shall come to Wuthering Heights tomorrow. He is in bed and too tired to go the distance now. You may also tell him that the mother of Linton desired him to remain under my guardianship, and, at present, his health is very precarious." "No," said Joseph, giving a thud with his prop on the floor and assuming an authoritative air. "No, that means naught. Heathcliff makes no count or to mother, nor you norther, but he'll hear his lad, and I'll men take him, so now you know." "You shall not tonight," answered Linton decisively. "Walk downstairs at once and repeat to your master what I have said, Alan. Show him down. Go." And, aiding the indignant elder with a lift by the arm, he rid the room of him and closed the door. "Very well," shouted Joseph as he slowly drew off. "To morn he's coming hissiln, and thrust him out if you dare." All right, there we go. Another chapter down. That was chapter 19. I'd love to hear your thoughts about chapter 19 over at reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. I am getting up early tomorrow to go on the radio with my good friend Aaron Huggins, 15-year-old author extraordinaire, to promote his book. If you haven't gone and read the blurb or checked out the cover art yet, please do. Go to upandupmedia.com.au/AaronHuggins. Oh, you can actually leave off the /AaronHuggins bit. Just go upandupmedia.com.au and look for the book. It's called Live a Little. So you'll see a link that says Live a Little, and that'll tell you all about it. I'm excited to share it with you guys, and I do really appreciate it. Quite a few pre-orders for Aaron's book have come through, and I'm reckoning that a fair few of those have been via the podcast. I've had some from America, Canada, one in Glasgow, which I think is cool, and in the UK and around Australia and all around the world. I've been having pre-orders drop in, so thank you guys. so much for pre-ordering the ebook and the paperback book. I have here with me the prototype of the book. And I don't know, I got it a couple of days ago and I'm just looking at it every day. Sometimes I just want to go and have a look at this book. I'm so proud to have been part of making Aaron's book a reality. And it's also, it's a proud moment for me because it's the first author sign up for my publishing label, Up and Up Media. Up and Up Media is a very, very small label, independent label. But the thing is that it is decisively not a self-publishing label. So you cannot pay me to be published through Up and Up Media. So I select books that I think will give the brand a good name. And I'm trying to cultivate a good catalogue of books. So it was a real search to find a book that I thought, A, fitted with that, and B, that I could actually help to promote in a way that the author couldn't do themselves. I'm really proud to be part of it and part of Aaron's journey. Aaron would have been an author, regardless of whether he met me or not. Like, he was always going to be an author, but I'm just really proud that I know I did as much as I possibly could to encourage his love of writing from the get-go. It gives me warm, fuzzy feelings just to even just hold the book in my hand and just kind of contemplate what it means to him, what it means to me. It's a good thing. So, go and have a look. It's a good read. It's a funny book. It's very entertaining. If you like Terry Pratchett or Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy or Neil Gaiman or even like Doctor Who or The Orville, something a bit science fiction but with a bit of humour, and also it's a murder mystery as well, so it's got that kind of Agatha Christie style to it as well. If any of that sounds appealing, please do go have a look. upandupmedia.com.au. That's it for today's podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Look forward to reading your thoughts, and I will see you tomorrow.